stay musically as possible. When the United Methodist Church joined together in 1968, we brought together two strands. We brought together the Methodist Church, and we brought together the former Evangelical United Brethren Church, often referred to as the EUBs. And in the Methodist Church, where the branch I grew up in, one of the hymns we sang regularly, sort of almost an anthem of Methodism, was "O For a Thousand Tongues to Sing," a great Wesleyan hymn. But on the other side of the house, in the EUB sector of our church, the song that they gravitated toward and expressed their faith clearly was "Great is Thy Faithfulness." And so we've sung both of those, and we get to close with another Wesleyan hymn this morning, but you'll get to that after my message. We continue our series today as we explore heroes of the Old Testament. And this morning, we're going to focus on Jacob. But before we do that, let me invite you to join me in prayer. Good and gracious and eternal God, we give you thanks for all your good gifts, but especially now the gift of your word. May it be for us once again a living word, because it lives in and through our lives. Amen. Now, some time ago, a young man who happened to be in college was asked a question, and that is, what's the most meaningful thing that's happened to you somewhat recently? And with no hesitation, he said, well, I had somebody analyze my handwriting, sort of on a whim. And one of the things that this analyst said is that my handwriting shows that I'm a strong extrovert. I was stunned. I mean, who knew? I always thought of myself as shy and withdrawn and didn't put myself out in front of people and tend to hold back. But I couldn't shake what was shared. And so I stepped into it. And I began to connect with people and reach out to people and talk with people and share with people. And it was the most amazing thing. Who knew? Who did? I mean, sometimes somebody will say something to us that causes us to see ourselves differently, maybe even to, in some significant way, claim for ourselves a new name that turns around or changes most everything. Now, we all have a name, and our names are the ways that we are identified. They tend to label us, and when somebody calls out our name, well, most of the times we smile, unless, well, the tone of voice says there might be trouble lurking. But most of the time, James Taylor's right. If you call out my name, no matter where I am, I'll come running because you're my friend. We call each other by name. We recognize each other by name. And when someone calls our name, it lights something up in us because we've been recognized and affirmed, and it begins a conversation and a chance to be known more deeply, and that makes a difference in terms of our lives. All started because we have a name. Now, the names we have are names that are given to us typically by our parents. We have four children, and when our first child arrived, it was 3 weeks. She arrived 3 weeks before anticipated arrival. And we had sorted through possibilities of names, but we had not landed on any name. But the baby's coming. and she was in labor, hard labor, for about 24 hours. I watched her pain. I stood by her. I breathed in her face until she asked me to please step back. I don't want any more he-he-he-whos from you. And as they whisk her away, that I was not allowed to do, even though I had graduated from prenatal classes, because they were going to give her an injection of pain medication, which precluded me from going in for the birth. I said to her, "Name the baby whatever you want. You've earned it." So 3 or 4 hours later, I stepped back, and she smiled, holding our daughter, and said, "Congratulations, meet your daughter, Melissa." Now, I knew it was going to begin with an M, because all of my wife's siblings' names begin with J, James, Janet, and Joan. And so she had determined that we would name all our children with the same letter. There are days I wish we hadn't have done that, but it is what it is. And so it was Melissa, and it seemed to fit, because I discovered Melissa means literally honeybee. It fit. It hurt coming out, and sweet after she arrived. She was followed by Mark, which means warlike one. And he is a determined, focused, determined person. Our third was named Meredith. She came 6 years later. And she was named after Meredith McRae, because we were fans of Green Acres. And Meredith Baxter Birney, because we're fans of Family Ties. Huh. And our fourth, well, she was named because I made a visit on a new couple that came to our church. And while I sat there, this little toddler came up, crawled in my lap, and during the 1 hour visit, never left. The parents said, "She's really shy. She doesn't take to people, but for some reason, she likes you." And I took to her. And her name was Molly. And our last daughter is named Molly. Yeah. Names matter, don't they? Being called by name matter. And being able to discover your name and claim your name is a significant part of our journey. But sometimes names even shape the direction we go in life. At least I think they do. There was a doctor in South Bend, Indiana, whose name was, last name, Toothacre. What else are you going to be, right? And the person who followed me in my second church, his name was Bob Priest, and was a pastor. Yeah, names shape our lives in significant ways, and significantly shape the life of Jacob, as Anne referred to. So bring up my first slide, and let's walk through this story, shall we? Now, on that night, Jacob got up and took his two wives and two female servants and 11 sons and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. Now, what kind of journey's on? Well, he's on a really hard journey. And the reason is because, well, his name was Jacob. And Jacob means cheater or supplanter. And he demonstrated that richly throughout his life. He cheated his brother out of his birthright. He cheated his father out of the blessing of the oldest son from his brother. And he cheated his father-in-law, Laban, out of the best livestock when he left after the marriage. So he is Well, let's put it this way. He's on the run, and he discovers that his brother Esau is hot on his trail and madder than hops and ready to have it out. And so Jacob then comes to this river. Next slide. And after he sent his entourage across the stream, he sent over his possessions, which would be, of course, the livestock that he'd stolen. Next slide. And so he's left alone. And you know, when you're facing trouble and difficulty, and particularly trouble that you might well have stirred up and caused, sometime you've got to wrestle with it. You've got to deal with it. And so there he was alone, night fallen. And he wrestles with a man till daybreak. Now, I don't know exactly how it all transpired. You know, maybe it was part dream. Was it an angel? Was it a person? Was it God? There's not a great deal of clarity, but this is what I know. He wrestled all night long. Was it his conscience? Was it God? Was it a person? Maybe. But what's clear is he's wrestling because he is in a point of contention. And as William James said, a crisis is an amazing opportunity for a conversion. And if anybody needed a conversion, it would be Jacob. Next slide. So he wrestled, he thought, he pushed, he tugged, he struggled to figure out, how do I move forward from this mess that I am embroiled in? Ever had that kind of sleepless night? Ever had that kind of wrestling? Ever invited God into that wrestling match? When the man saw that he couldn't overpower him, when he saw that Jacob couldn't overpower him, he pulled out his special trick hold. Evidently, the dude had been in the WWF, I don't know. But he grabbed him by the hip and pulled that sucker out of the socket. Ow! And wrenched it and pulled it to get him to let go. Right? He wants him to yell, "Uncle! Stop! Let go!" He won't. Next slide. And then the man said, "Let me go, for it's almost daybreak. I got stuff to do, man." But Jacob replied, "I will not let you go. I got to confess, I'm a product of the music of the 60s and 70s. And when I read this verse, I heard Freddie Mercury and Queen, Bohemian Rhapsody. Let me go, I will not let him go. Let him go, I will not let him go. Let me go, I will not let you go. Yes, no, yes, no, yes, no." You probably didn't need to know that, did you? "I will not let you go unless you bless me." Blessing's huge as a part of faith, particularly in the Old Testament. A blessing, as we've learned before, is to receive the presence and the power of God to accomplish the purpose of God. Because we can't do what God calls us to do without God's presence and power. Amen? Yeah. And so we need that blessing. "I will not let you go until you bless me." Next slide. And the man asked him, "What's your name?" They've been wrestling all night, and now you ask, "What's your name?" "Jacob. Cheater. That's why I'm in the mess I'm in." Yeah. Next slide. And then the man said, "Your name will no longer be Cheater, Jacob, but Israel. You're getting a change of name because you have struggled with God. You didn't just wrestle with a human being or an angel. You actually contended with, wrestled with God and with humans and have overcome. You've had a breakthrough. And so, yes, I will bless you with a new name, and that name is Israel." And Israel translated as an reminded us, means prince. He goes from being a cheater to a prince. What does that mean? Well, as any kid can tell you, if you're a prince or a princess, that means you are a descendant of a king. What he's telling Jacob is, you're a princess because you are my son. Not a cheater, a prince. Next slide. Jacob said, "Please tell me your name." But God replies, "Why do you ask my name?" And then he blessed him there. But he doesn't tell him his name. Why? Because to have the name of God is to then perhaps have control of God and be able to call on God like God's a genie to do whatever magic you want done. And that's why in the Old Testament, you don't hear the name for God. In fact, God's name doesn't have vowels, so you can't pronounce it. You can only refer to it by using the general term, the Lord. Because we don't command God. God blesses us. And then he blessed him with God's presence and God's power to accomplish God's purpose. Next slide. And so Jacob called the place Peniel, which simply means, because I saw God face to face and my life was spared. Next slide. Because you've got to wrap the story up. The sun rose above him, he was past Peniel, and because they threw his hip out of joint, right? Next slide. And then a little bit of kind of end of the saga. Therefore, to this day, Israelites don't eat the tendon attached to the socket of the hip. Asked as a sign of respect because the socket of Jacob's hip was touched near the tendon, and therefore they don't eat that meat because it reminds them of God's touch. So what happens to Jacob? He becomes a prince. Not just a change of name, it changes his whole life. He begins to behave like a prince. He steps up. He seeks forgiveness from his brother. He finds reconciliation. He becomes a part of the royal lineage when we refer to God of Jacob and Isaac and Jacob, Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, because he became a prince. His life transformed, not just his name, but his life. And that's the key piece of the story. You see, when you get a new name, you get new hope. You get a chance at a do-over. You get a chance to become what God sees you and become what God has for you. And that is great news, not just for Jacob, but for all of us. Because that's the way God is. God doesn't see or call Paul Saul. Saul, he calls Saul Paul. Gives him a new name. And he becomes a different person. Saul, the persecutor of the church, becomes Paul, the missionary to the Gentiles. God doesn't just see Simon. He calls him Peter, rock, because He's no longer the person who betrayed Jesus and denied him and left him, but he's instead the person who began to lead the mission to help persons come to know God through Jesus Christ, the very rock of faith on which the church is founded. They became different persons with a different mission when God gave them a new name. But that doesn't just happen then. That happens still now. Can happen to us. You see, I would pose this question to you. What is the deepest desire of your heart? If you could, what would you wish to have in order to follow God or to serve God, to be closer to God? What would be that thing? Is it courage? Is it peace? Is it forgiveness? Is it hope? What is that quality that might be the new name that you might claim because God sees you that way and you become the way God sees you? Earlier in my spiritual journey, I read books by a fellow by the name of Bruce Larson, a Presbyterian pastor, and developed small group kind of materials and such. And so I became pretty familiar with his work. But I didn't know this about him until years later. He tells a story about himself going on about a two-month trip with good friends, their families, going out on a journey or a trek. And while they're out there for 2 months, that's a long time. I mean, if you're with somebody 3 days, you get to know them in a way you don't if they're just over for the afternoon. 2 months, oh my goodness. That may be more than I want you to know about me. Right? But nonetheless, they went. And so during that two-month period, Larson wrestled with the fact that he's pretty much like Oscar Madison of The Odd Couple. He's pretty persnickety and has to have everything just right, and when he gets under stress, he tends to make things more important than people. And so during the prayer time they had in the evening as they'd gather each night, he simply said, "Lord, please help me to not be neurotic with these friends of mine." And his son, who's about 8 or 9 years old, said, "Daddy, what's a neurotic?" He said, "Oh, son, that's a crabby old man." He looked at him and said, "Daddy, you're not a crabby old man. You're fun." And about the time that Larson was going to correct his son for not telling the truth, he looked in his eyes. And he saw that in his son's eyes, he was fun. His son gave him a new name. And he said, "For the rest of the trip, I only had one incident for a short period of time. And when you're a long-term neurotic, that's amazing." What happens if we see ourselves through God's eyes? What happens if we see ourselves the way others see us, through God's eyes? I mean, what difference could it make, right? I mean, sometimes, and I'm guilty of this, sometimes I sort of got people figured out so I know how that I see them. So I see them in a particular way, and therefore I relate to them a certain way, and I pray for them in a certain way, and guess what? They stay that way, right? So if I see someone, say my boss, I see my boss as bossy, and I relate to my boss as bossy, both my facial expressions and inside. And because I'm Christian, I pray for my boss to not be so bossy, but stays bossy. Or I see my neighbor is indifferent, and so I see my neighbor is indifferent, and I relate to my neighbor is indifferent, and I pray for my neighbor is indifferent, and my neighbor stays indifferent. What has to happen to change? I need to see them the way God sees them. I need to look at them through different eyes, because if I see them as patient and I relate to them as patient and I pray for them as patient people, I begin to see a shift in their life. See, this name thing was not just for Jacob. It's for all of us. And it makes a difference in the way that we can live. I want to make sure I get this right, so I'll use my cheat sheet. An African family had four children, and with their children, they decided what names they would give them. I love these names. The names are Chido, which means the desire of my heart. Isn't that beautiful? And the second was Batis, which means may you help. Again, beautiful, positive. The third, Rudo, which means we have been comforted by love. And the fourth, Danai, which means may you love one another. And those are the characteristics those children began to display because that was their names, right? So I began to think, so what if I see my supervisor? No, let's say, what if I see my spouse? Ooh. By the name, the desire of my heart, as her name. What if I see my child as one that may help? What if I see my aunt as you have been comforted by love? What if I see my neighbor as may you love one another? What if we begin to see people the way God sees people, that they might receive the name that God has for them? I'll close this way. Oh, 35 years ago? 40? I was challenged by the question I asked you before, which is, if you could have the desire of your heart in your relationship with God, what would it be? And it came to me immediately, peace. I wish I had a deep sense of peace. So I learned what's called a breath prayer, which simply goes like this. Say the name of God that most connects with you, and for me, it's gracious God. You know that because I use it every time I pray before my message. Gracious God. Then what's the deepest desire of my heart? Grant me your peace. I breathe in, gracious God. I breathe out, grant me your peace. I would do that repeatedly for 3 or 4 minutes with my eyes closed. Gracious God, grant me your peace. Gracious God, grant me your peace. I did that several times a day. I did that for several days. It became a part of the pattern of my prayer life. To this day. It's not coincidental that if you get an email or a note from me or I sign off on my my newsletter article, it will end the same way. Peace, comma, Doug. Because that's become an integral part of who I am and how I see myself, because I see myself the way God sees me, and that is as a person of peace. What is the deepest desire of your heart? I would ask you to consider that, to ask for that in grace, to receive that with courage, and to live that with joy. Because, brothers and sisters, that could well be your new name. Thanks be to God. Amen.